hoy, all you true sons and daughters. I'm John Miller, and this is Locked on Mizzou, your destination for partisan Missouri Tigers football and basketball talk 5 days a week. And as always, thank you all so much for rating and reviewing on Apple Podcasts. And hey, you know what? Here's a new trick. You can play this show on any smart speaker. Say, like, for example, Alexa, play podcast Locked on Mizzou, and you'll be good to go. Your Google Home, any of that stuff. Neat little trick, right? Well, anyway, with those plugs out of the way, we got a lot of news, a lot of things to talk about today, don't we? Including the obvious, including who is going to replace Barry Odom, that whole situation, as Mizzou's next football coach. Also, I want to talk a little bit about Drew Locke and his first start. But unfortunately, I got to start with some sad news. And that's about former Missouri basketball player Keon Lawrence, who died this past week at the age of 32. Obviously, that's way too soon for any young man to leave this planet. And, you know, it was apparently some sort of undisclosed virus illness, some sort of thing like that. That's all the information I have about Keon's death. But, you know, just really quickly, I just wanted to say a couple words about Keon. He was a really good player. Man, it's too bad. I always felt bad that it didn't work out for Keon at Missouri because, you know, his sophomore season, I thought he showed a ton of promise in particular. You know, 11 points a game he averaged, pretty good shooting percentages. I don't know. He had a really good game, in my opinion. Good ball handler. But unfortunately, Keon signed with Quinn Snyder. And then, well, of course, Quinn was not long for the Missouri program at that point. Ends up playing 2 years with Mike Anderson. And, well, apparently, that just was never the perfect fit, for if you read between the lines from what Keon said when he transferred. But ultimately ends up finishing his last 2 years at Seton Hall. Honestly, it's interesting to think back as a what if, because Keon transferred right before that famous 2008-2009 season that turned around Mike Anderson's tenure, made Missouri's first Elite Eight in many years since 2002. So, you know, that was a great team and a great run, and it's interesting to think, well, what would that team have looked like with Keon Lawrence on it? I have no idea, obviously, but something interesting to think about. But you know what? Speaking of people who are leaving before their eligibility is up, Jordan Elliott and Albert Okwuegbunam both leaving for the NFL. And honestly, I think both decisions probably are the correct one to make. Certainly in Jordan Elliott's case, I'm fully expecting him to be a first day or two pick for sure. I'd almost be surprised if he's not a first or second rounder at this point. He's been, you know, we've talked a lot about Jordan and how productive he was this year. So, honestly, coming in to a new coach, new system, doesn't make a lot of sense. So, good luck to Jordan in the NFL. And as for Albert O, well, obviously I wish him luck as well. But, honestly, the idea that he is a likely first or second day pick, which I've seen some people say, I got to be honest, I'm just not seeing it. I'd be really shocked if he ends up as a first 2 day pick. So that'd be what, first 3 rounds? Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm just not seeing it. A guy who struggled with drops this season. At the same time, he's never really shown the ability to be an actual on the line blocking tight end. I'm just not seeing it, but I hope I'm wrong, and hopefully he goes on to have a great NFL career. And speaking of guys who may not be around on the football field next year for Mizzou is Connor Basilak. Yes, the news just broke before I started recording this. Mitchell Forty of Power Mizzou is reporting that Connor Basilak did indeed tear his ACL and his knee on that ill-advised poor late slide there in the Arkansas game. And you know what? That was a big blow, in my mind at least, to the Odom regime, because I've talked previously in this space about how one thing that's really hurting Odom as far as his chances of being retained next year Well, I thought one thing that was hurting him is we just didn't have a lot of hope, and in particular at the quarterback position. See, I've seen a lot of people compare Gary Pinkel's first 4 years to Barry Odom's first 4 years. And in terms of the record, they are pretty much the same. Pinkel was 18-18. Odom was 18-17 in the 2 through 4 years. So you might be saying, well, if that's the case, then Missouri obviously would have made a huge mistake firing Gary Pinkel with the benefit of hindsight. Are we sure that that's not what we're doing with Barry Odom right now? Well, I have to be honest. When I see three of my favorite Missouri football players of all time, Jeremy Maclin, Sean Weatherspoon, and Brad Smith, all three men expressed their displeasure on Twitter, on social media, with the firing of Barry Odom. And that definitely gives me pause. It really does. Because, well, what do I know about football that those guys don't know? I mean, if those great men, if those fine football players, those Mizzou greats, if they're upset, well, maybe I should be upset too. But then I have to take a step back, and you have to think about what it is that makes a good coach, what it is that can take Missouri, which is always going to be in the bottom half, if not the bottom third, of SEC revenue, of SEC attendance, etc. We're always going to be behind Tennessee, Florida, Georgia in terms of revenue. That's just probably the reality that Missouri is always going to be in. So how is Gary Pinkel able to overcome some of that to some extent? How was that regime able to outperform the sort of general baseline of what you have for Missouri? Well, obviously, any coach, it's going to take recruiting. It's going to take a great scheme. It's going to take great player development, or quite simply, you're going to have to be really good at the quarterback position of finding guys who can play quarterback consistently in college. Well, that was one thing that Gary Pinkel was clearly great at, was finding quarterbacks over and over again. And again, going back to Connor Bazelak, well, maybe if we would have seen an entire game of Bazelak, especially before the Arkansas game, if we would have really seen that and we'd have seen, oh gosh, this guy has a chance here. You see, that's the difference between comparing this year four of Pinkel to year four of Odom. You see, Pinkel had already unearthed the gem of a quarterback at that point. See, Pinkel deserved to have another year of Brad Smith, his senior year. He deserved to see that out. He really did. And honestly, after the Georgia game, I was encouraging Barry to start putting Bazelak out there now. Play him his two games of eligibility that he still has while you can, because I knew that his job was in trouble. He needed to see what he had in the future, and unfortunately he did it a little bit too late, and even more unfortunately, the kid hurt himself. That's just bad luck, but it was also bad timing on Odom's part a little bit. And you know what? I want to get more into what I think Missouri needs to look for in a new coach and the guys that I'm leaning toward, including my opinion of Lane Kiffin, and also a little bit on Drew Locke's game in Denver as well. But first, I just want to remind you that Audible has the world's largest selection of audiobooks and audio entertainment. Start listening with a 30-day Audible trial. Choose one audiobook and two Audible originals absolutely free. Visit audible.com/LockedOnNBA. That's right, LockedOnNBA. That's the promo code they gave me. You did not hear incorrectly. But you know what? If you want to hear more about these and other offers from Locked On, visit LockedOnPodcast.com/offers. So even though, as I said, when Jeremy Maclin, Sean Weatherspoon, Brad Smith, those type of guys, when they're going to bat publicly for Barry Odom, that gives me a lot of pause. But then I've got to circle back to, let's say, the four factors that I was talking about earlier that I believe that can raise Missouri's baseline higher. Well, clearly one of those factors is recruiting. Now, essentially, Missouri has some disadvantages by being in the SEC in terms of geography and demographics. Long story short, even though Georgia, Alabama, Louisiana, those states, for example, have not a totally dissimilar population size to Missouri, they're all about in the same 5-6 million, however many people. Not that big of a difference in terms of population, but what is a difference is the amount of 4- and 5-star football players that those deep South states churn out versus Missouri. That's just a fact of life. That's a lot of things. Again, it's demographics, it's culture, it's all kinds of stuff. But again, most importantly, it's reality. So that's going to be tough. Certainly Barry Odom never raised Missouri's recruiting level above, say, Tennessee's, for instance, despite the fact that we were beating Tennessee like a drum for years. And so how do you raise that? Well, I got to be honest, I'm not sure that there is any candidate out there that can absolutely raise Missouri's recruiting profile. I'm not sure who that person is. Now, if there is anybody, maybe it's Lane Kiffin. Maybe it really is. Now, when I got to be honest, when I first heard the name Lane Kiffin bandied about, I dismissed the idea. I thought, oh, come on, really? This guy? He flamed out at two different places. Seems like kind of a clown in a lot of ways. I realized he's rehabbed his image. Let's put it that way. Stops at Alabama, now at Florida Atlantic. So I'm not totally dismissing the notion. If that's really true, if we really think that Lane Kiffin can truly raise Missouri up maybe 10, 15 spots consistently on a national basis in terms of recruiting, well, that really does move the needle, and it's something you have to consider. I'm a little dubious of that, though. How do we know that Lane Kiffin is just a good recruiter at places that tend to get the good recruits? You see, that's the thing about college football. It tends to not change very much over the years. The teams that tended to get the best recruits 20 years ago, 30 years ago when I started following this stuff, still, generally speaking, the same teams are getting the best recruits, and that was true even 20, 30 years ago before I was alive. Now, Gary Pinkel, his classes were never loaded with 4- and 5-star recruits by any means. In fact, famously, no, we got a ton out of 2-, 3-star recruits like Brad Smith and Sean Weatherspoon. See, the Jeremy Maclin-type 4-star players, your Sheldon Richardsons, those were more the exception. So it wasn't recruiting, per se, in terms of your flat-out star rating, hey, just get your blue-chip-type guys. That wasn't where Gary Pinkel did it. Now, again, getting back to some other factors, obviously he always had an answer at quarterback. So that's the big one right there. Not to be overly simplistic, but if you can just nail the quarterback position in terms of having a ready-made starter after the other guy graduates every time, which essentially that's what Gary Pinkel was able to do in his tenure, oh man, can you imagine how much easier life is? Florida fans are nodding their heads vigorously right now. Well, Odom hasn't really shown that ability yet. Certainly hasn't proven it. Drew Locke wasn't his guy. Let's keep that in mind. So he hasn't been able to raise the recruiting. He hasn't been able to nail the quarterback position. So what else do we have? Well, you've got scheme, especially offensive scheme, in my opinion. Obviously, you've got the Mike Leach types who can scheme their way to victories every year and be better than anybody's ever been at a place like Washington State. Now, I've heard no indication whatsoever that Missouri is going to go after Mike Leach, but if they could, again, there's a guy who can bring his scheme, his coaching style, and can clearly raise Missouri up a bit just based on that alone. And honestly, I think that's something, especially with the benefit of hindsight, Dave Yost didn't get enough credit, folks. And Gary Pinkel and Dave Yost collectively didn't get enough credit for being forward-thinking with their offense. I mean, I remember blanching a little bit when we suddenly went to this 5-wide spread-style offense in 2005, but that ended up being ahead of the curve. Ultimately, when we were doing the jet sweep-style stuff to Henry Josie. They ended up getting him tons of yards per carry in that 2011 season. That was all forward-looking stuff that made us better than maybe we otherwise would have been. That raised Missouri up by being scheme-wise forward-thinking. And then finally, what Missouri did well, again, what I'm calling your four factors, recruiting, scheme, quarterbacks. Well, finally, the fourth one, development. Obviously, Missouri did a great job of developing players, of taking guys that were athletes, guys, the classic Charles Harris example, the classic Denario Alexander example. Well, we took guys who were excellent athletes, maybe they were late bloomers physically, redshirted them, developed, brought them along slowly, whatever it was, and then eventually you had yourself a diamond in the rough. Well, part of that, a big part of that, based on what I'm hearing from all the players, the former players, what they say made this program work, one of them was Pat Ivey, a guy who is the strength and conditioning coach, long time under Pinkel. Well, unfortunately, when Barry Odom came in, it sure seems like he had a mandate to basically clean house, get rid of everything that was attached to the 2015 protests, the former Pinkel regime, if you will, as if it was Gary Pinkel's fault or Pat Ivey's fault, to put a finer point on it. Anything that happened, regardless of what you think about the fall of 2015, what did they have to do with any of it? Was it their fault? Were recruits going to be like, oh yeah, I remember those guys. Yeah, they're the white supremacists. That's it, right? Was that what we were supposed to think? Well, certainly, I don't know how anybody could think of that of Pat Ivey, because everybody I know, everybody I've talked to says Pat Ivey, salt of the earth guy, and honestly, one of the big reasons why these guys developed so well. It was because we knew how to train these guys and make them into the type of athletes that they could be, to take a Charles Harris and mold him into a football player. And the main point here is just, again, no matter what you think of 2015, the reaction to it by our university to just clean house of everybody involved with the football program was absurd and totally counterproductive, especially with the benefit of hindsight. So again, my point here, just to recap, is that while I'm not saying it's totally obvious that Barry Odom should have been fired, and again, it gives me a ton of pause when I see great former Tigers that I have nothing but respect for have a different opinion, say that, gee, actually, and say quite passionately that we should have kept Barry Odom. But you know what, again, when I get back to what I believe are those four factors that can raise this Missouri program up from what its baseline generally is, when you really look at it, I don't think Barry Odom has done well in any of those four. He's done well at getting players to play hard for him and like him and go to bat for him and all that good stuff. But unfortunately, that hasn't ultimately resulted in the raising up of any of those four factors, and particularly recruiting, which the guy I'm describing to you, you would think that maybe the recruiting would raise up, but it just hasn't. And to be fair to Odom, I'm not sure who that guy is. But you know what? Speaking of a guy who was a nice recruit from Missouri, Drew Locke. And you know what? I'm going to talk just a little bit about his first start against the Los Angeles Chargers in just a bit. Well, I have to say, Drew Locke, after, well, a couple nervous throws there early that were errant. First half, I thought he looked great. Really did. Obviously, the unbelievable catch by Courtland Sutton down the sidelines there, but a perfectly thrown ball by Locke as well from about 30, 35 yards out. Beautiful play for the first touchdown. How fun was that to see his parents, his sister up in the stands, going wild, loving life. Come on, that's what sports is all about. Good stuff. Felt great for Drew. Obviously got the win there at the end. But you know what? Honestly, I thought, if anything, the Broncos got a little conservative in general, but especially in the second half. Now, don't get me wrong. I thought early in the game when they were kind of doing about a 50-50 mix, doing plenty of first down runs with Philip Lindsay, which were effective. Obviously, they should run the football. I mean, you don't want to just put everything on your first-time starter. The guy hasn't taken a real snap before in the league, and it's week 11 here. So he's obviously been sitting down with an injury. So, yeah, help your quarterback out. I get it. My whole thing is it wasn't so much that they were running the ball too much. Why not play action and just let him chuck that ball downfield two or three more times? Loosen up the defense. Let that running game work a little bit. Because if there's one thing that Drew Locke can do, it's throw an absolutely beautiful deep ball. We know that. And again, that play down the sidelines to Cortland Sutton kind of showed that a little bit. But even more so, you know, like I said, just take a couple deep shots. Maybe make it on play action, something. I just didn't understand that. Because to me, again, that's not that risky of a play either. We're not talking about, to me, what would be risky is having him drop back and throw it 50 times. So, again, the fact that they ran the ball, all for it, just thought, hey, let him loosen up that defense and show off the arm a little bit. Because if you're just going on pure arm talent, as the saying goes these days, well, he was by far the best guy in the draft. I mean, there's no comparison. You can't compare his arm to Kyler Murray's or Dwayne Haskins or anybody. I mean, he had the best one. He really did. So if he can just figure out, you know, the decision-making a little bit, be a little bit better under pressure, well, my goodness, then Drew Locke has incredible upside. There's no doubt about that. I've just been a little bit skeptical at times that he's ever going to weed out those bad decisions, those questionable sort of robotic decisions, not really bothering to check and see if there's a man there, for instance, and just automatically throwing the ball. If he can just work some of that out, hey, he's got a shot. He really does. I thought it was a really good beginning for him. You know, obviously, as we've seen, guys can look good in their first start or two before the league, quote-unquote, figures you out. So we'll see with Drew. But so far, all systems go. And you know what? It's all systems go right here on Locked On Mizzou. We will be back very soon, tomorrow, in fact, with more talk about the Mizzou coaching situation, naturally, and a little bit of Mizzou basketball. But until then, I am John Miller, and this has been another episode of Locked On Mizzou.